Just a quick warning that we're going to be talking about flying, falling, working for an airline, death, photography, light to heavy religious themes, existentialism, of course, and some other stuff that just might bring some dready feelings to your soul. So if you're not in the right headspace for that, then maybe just skip these next few episodes. If you couldn't guess by that incredible trigger warning, this is A Hopeless Endeavor. We are a Joanna Newsom Lyrica podcast.
But you know what? Not even...
I'm so sorry. I'm terrible.
Tell me. Not even what?
Not even a lyrical podcast because we have that incredible submission from Jack that's coming. But I
get ready. We're hitting it from all angles. You know who we are. We don't need to do the intro. It's fine. I'm Sam.
I'm so sorry. I feel bad. I'm Nikki.
Don't that be was sorry.
Rude. Oh, God.
It's not rude. It's fine.
You guys, Sam has a beautiful intro cadence, and I ruined it, so I'm sorry for for fucking up the rhythm of this podcast. Okay, this is part two of A Pin Light Bent.
It sure is.
And we are here. Last time...
That's it.
Last time we talked for a whole hour about the person we think is being referenced, at least indirectly, Françoise de Marrière, who was a flight attendant who fell to her death from a plane, if you remember. James L. Dickey wrote a poem about her falling to her death that we extensively talked about. Do you have some more preliminary notes before we get into the actual lyrics?
You know what? I don't think I do. And that might be like narrow-minded of me, because I didn't dig a lot past, like, preliminary stuff past that poem. Now I'm questioning everything. Well, it's too late now. Here we are. So I don't.
Here we are.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah, I have a little bit from Blessing
Great.
All the Birds.
Saving us.
Well, okay, and then, but I am also in the same boat as you where I'm like, look, I need to do some fucking research, especially about, like, Buddhism and, like, oneness and also camera obscuras. So all of that I still need to do, and so we're definitely not going to get into that in this episode, because there are some wormholes that I think this song mandates exploring. I think we would not be doing our jobs here.
Ooh,
both. Okay, so.
Oh, boy.
It wouldn't be a hopeless endeavor, nor would it be blessing all the birds unless we got into some gender stuff. And so I just wanted to do some comparisons between John Perry Mitchell and Françoise de Marrière, which we did a little bit on the last episode. But just to delve into that a little bit more here, if that is okay with you.
I'm so excited.
Okay, great. So this is wholly a result of, wholly from Blessing All the Birds and Melissa Martirano's amazing insight. Also, Rachel Parent says some amazing stuff. And, of course, we're going to link to the Blessing All the Birds articles, both the Delving into Divers post and the Chiastic post, where she compares this song with Sapochronicon. And so this is just a little... passage I'm going to read from the Delving into Divers series, even though it is comparing Sapochronicon and A Pin Light Bent. All right. So John Perry Mitchell from Sapochronicon falls as a result of an hamartia, a hubristic mistake. Mitchell did not wear a seatbelt while flying. And the woman falls as a result of an accident out of her control. The plane door just opened. Both tragic in the Greek definition of the word. One figure falls as he strives to be remembered as heroic, and the other falls while she is at work on a presumably mundane day, which to me reads as a very gendered division. Both Mitchell and de Marrière are immortalized after death through artistic monuments, textual for John and Françoise, and physical for John. Blurring the boundaries between mortality and immortality, impermanence and permanence, that Newsom's narrators and divers continually encounter. Yeah, so I thought that that was interesting. Yeah. The idea that even in death, even in these mirror images of these people falling from planes to their death, that are perfectly mirrored in Sapochnikons being the second song on the album and A Pin Light Bends being the second to last song on the album, we have this straight up contrast of the gendered ways in which these things present themselves in the real world. Like, I think that's just so beautifully done of Joanna to have to reflected and contrasted these things so perfectly. And also just chronologically on the album, the man comes first and the woman comes second. The man is named and the woman is not named. The man is doing something heroic and hubristic and the woman is just trying to fucking do her like service work.
And there's also like an agency thing there, right? Like he chose not to wear his seatbelt. She didn't choose to open the door. She tried to stuff a pillow in it and stop it.
That's a great point. That he was taking these risks completely of his own volition. I mean, if determinism isn't real. And she was just doing her job, not trying to assume any risks at all, like just minding her own business, and the plane just like literally sucked her out.
Minding her own business. Ugh. Yeah. It's just like the idea of dying at work too is just so awful. God.
Like it really does paint this image that I think is super accurate and like speaks to me very much of like men like triumphantly and like very showboatily and like in this like vaudevillian way almost like putting themselves out there and putting this show on and being like, I'm going to fucking do a loop and not wear my seatbelt and like, it'll be fine. And women just having their head down, wiping the fucking counter or like serving the fucking drinks on the plane. And like that, it's an act of service too, I think is important that she's providing things for other people on the plane while in the midst of that gets sucked out the door to her death. Like, great. Wow. What a life women have.
Yeah. I didn't think about, I like that you mentioned how John Perry Mitchell was mentioned first and she was last. And I think that again, that distinction between named and unnamed is, I want to say intentional, but.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's the fate of not just Françoise de Marrière, who is, like, and that's another thing. There's like this meta commentary going on. So Françoise de Marrière, even though she isn't named in the poem and she isn't named in A Pin Light Bent, is still remembered as the figure that falls from the sky who isn't being named. But then we learn from the New York Times article that there are these other two women who we don't even know the names of at all. You know what I mean? So like there's not naming, and then there's like really, really not naming. We know who Françoise de Marrière is. We have no idea who these other women are.
Yeah. So brutal.
It reminds me of... Yeah, go ahead.
Nope, go.
I was just going to say, it reminds me of just the themes in Sapochnikon, where there's like not being remembered, but like also we kind of do remember them because we do research about them. Even though in like mainstream history, they're not remembered. And then there's like the like indigenous people that came before, even the Lenape people that were there that like we really don't remember. We don't know anything about them. So there's like these, obviously, I guess this is not really a super insightful point, but it's just striking to me that there are these different layers of not being remembered. These different extents to which people are forgotten.
Yeah, and that speaks to the hand that's writing history in Sapochnikon too, right?
Yes. And also, did you say in that New York Times article, do you still have it pulled up, were they Thai women? Is that a thing that I'm making up?
Because I think then it was
race could also be a thing here.
Yeah, I think the article said they were from... Oh, shit, I closed it. Hold on, give me one sec. Two separate incidents occurred last September in Argentina when two stewardesses were killed in separate mishaps. What? It's just such a casual mention of them at the end, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, this seems like something that should be incredibly rare, but... Oh, in fact, nope, this has happened before multiple times.
Yeah. And instead of saying, like, this happened to this person who, you know... had a life and was a person. It mm-hmm. was just like, this happened to two flight attendants, naming their jobs. Mm-hmm. And then also mm-hmm. almost as a way of just saying like, look, there's probably something wrong with these planes.
Yeah.
Like instead yeah. of actually focusing on the humanity of
it's what the boat, the tragedy. They say in both cases, the cabin doors of this plane blew off at relatively low altitudes. So the thing that's awful about that is they knew it was a problem the first time they happened, right? So there's like an air of, I don't know, like chosen ignorance there, willful ignorance. Okay. Any other pre-limb stuff? So if you haven't read the poem... I would suggest you do, because it's a beautiful reader. Go back and listen to our last episode. Also, that Blessing All the Birds article, Delving into Divers, A Pin Leg Bent, is a really lovely read.
Yeah, I actually have a few other quotes from that, if that's okay. Just because I'm obsessed Perfect. With Blessing All the Birds. Like, what are we supposed to do? It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so Rachel writes of A Pin Leg Bent... A Pin Leg Bent, for me, is a song full of resignation and understanding. It skirts the edges of nihilism. In the last lines, the narrator admits that their life is essentially meaningless, just a trick of the light, completely passive. Yet there is defiance, too. The narrator takes ownership of the tiny light they are permitted. It is theirs, even if just lent. Furthermore, the pin light of their life is bent. It navigates between opposites, confronts barriers, and changes course. It is active, not passive. However minuscule the sliver of great light that we attempt to pass off as our own, it is ours to do with what we will. We do not need to be confined by walls and fences, seas and land. We move like bending light through them. And I loved Rachel's just calling to the forefront again this playing with opposites and binaries and like these mm-hmm. tensions. On our sweet list that you made, Sam, we have as things to keep in mind as we go throughout this album, the theme of binaries pulling these songs taut, which I think is a quote directly from Joanna, that there are these opposites that are just working against each other but also together throughout these songs.
Yeah, something that I loved about Jack's voice memo that you'll hear at the end of one of these episodes is that he described those binaries as tensions. And I don't think that's something, like, I don't think that's a word we use to describe them, but I think we kind of talked around that description with the pushing and the pulling and like the switching between them. But I just loved that Jack used that word, that there's a tensity to those binaries.
I love that. It is tense. And there's this tension that comes from the binaries pulling at each other throughout the song. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think from us, like from the listener, this tension that comes with like trying to grapple with like how to make sense of these opposites at the same time. You know, like it's not a comfortable position to be in as a listener. You have to like mm-hmm. pull yourself apart in a way to feel the pull of both of the binaries. Mm-hmm. And maybe in keeping with this theme loosely, is it okay if I read another quote from Rachel Parent?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Okay. So she writes, "I see this song as separated into two halves. The first half is mostly concerned with the falling narrative. The second starts to confront light and its role in a universe built on duality and opposites. Light is, to me, life source power, and it is very fluid in this song. It comes and goes, like waves moving back and forth, pulled, importantly, I think, by the moon. Light/life travels through the barriers of the world in the act of falling. It passes sky, ocean, city, garden. It sees them all, yet is disconnected. The separation is key. In a world of opposites and dualism, light slash light is heavily controlled, contained, and manipulated. The image of the honeycomb city is one of my very favorites on the whole album because it speaks so much to the disconnection and separation that torments the album. It is trapped in strange homes, intersected and enclosed, and electric and alone. It intersects, yet it is hopelessly disconnected. Opposites rub up against each other, but never produce the spark of electricity. It is passive, tragic. Oh, Rachel, that writing and that insight is just fucking on point.
And Rachel put into words why I love that verse so much better than I ever could have. It's, yeah, it's that tensity. It's that disconnect. It's that resignation. Yeah, I love all of that so much.
I think we'll talk about it too, but like, oh God, dude, like the idea of everyone being so close, but like closed off from each other. Like we are one thing, but like also we're making it so that we're all discreet and not connect. We're connected, but we're not connecting, you know? It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
It's like a political platform that you could run on. We're connected, but not connecting.
Yeah, so I guess we should probably get into the lyrics of this first part, which Rachel describes as the falling narrative before this like huge explosion of like philosophical musings and theories and ruminations and trouble.
Sure, I think that's a good plan.
Okay. All right, I will leave it to you. Yeah.
Okay. So she sings, "My life comes and goes. My life comes and goes. Short flight, free rose. I lie down and doze."
All right. So what does she mean in here by "my life comes and goes"?
I mean, the first thing I think of is what you just read about, what Rachel was saying, which is that like, that disconnect. So that the one side of the coin is that life is impermanent and small and easy to lose. It comes and goes. It's like a very chill. It's here and it's not. But that's posed against the other side, which is like life is this big, heavy, awful, whatever, that we don't have any control over, and that's awful and worrisome, and we should think about that a lot. So I think I feel that duality really big there.
Yeah, it's like a carefree. Yeah, that's so interesting. Like on the one hand, it's a carefree statement, and in that it's just like light and breezy and like whatever, my life comes and goes. It's like a light way of saying that. But then like another interpretation of that same line, which she repeats, is like, oh shit, like, oh, my life comes and goes. Like it's dispensable, like, existential dread immediately. Like it's
yes,
terrifying.
Yeah, I love that reading that like the first one is like, what can you do? It comes and goes. And the second one is like, oh, hold shit. On a second. Yeah.
The implications.
It comes and it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We're interrupting each other so much.
I'm so sorry. I hate when do that. It's just too. Like it's neither of our faults. We're just like, maybe it's just that we're both so excited
that we're on Zoom too.
Yeah, Zoom is terrible. There's definitely a lag. No, I want you to go there.
I was just gonna say that maybe it's just reflecting like the falling journey. Like life was here, and through this, the narrative of the falling poem, we can see it come and go very quickly.
Yes.
What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say that I think it's important, too, that it's a repeated line that she says it twice right from the fucking beginning, because I think that it sets that up as being cyclical. It happens over and over again. It comes and goes, and it comes and goes. Like, so it is maybe laying the groundwork for this idea of either like reincarnation or like something along those lines where like this is not just a singular existence that we're going to be talking about. Like we're talking about lives being lived over and over again, potentially. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that repetition is significant.
Mm-hmm. And Jack, again, in his voicemail notes that those notes start here, right? We're at the beginning of the song. So we have those two, what he refers to as drone notes, A and C, that as we move through these verses become an A minor chord and then an F major chord. Mm. But I think what you just said about the beginning of the song is mirrored in the musicality here. And yeah. Be it that it's... I don't know. It feels very serious. The music here feels
so serious.
Yeah.
Totally. It feels serious.
Which makes me second guess my like flippant life comes and goes, man.
Yeah. But I feel like that there is something like there is some at least alluding to that kind of attitude because like she's like lying down and taking a nap. Like it's she's not super heavy.
Yeah.
So there's like this like big life and death, huge questions like sort of looming in the background. But she's like, I'm just going to like doze. I'm going to take a doze, which is the most like lackadaisical, relaxed way that you could possibly describe sleeping. So I think that there is that vibe here. Again, it's just the binary pulling like this light, airy mm-hmm. vibe on the one hand, contrasted with this really like as heavy as you can get grappling with death vibe. Right along with it. And yeah, there's so much tension in this song.
So I just looked up the definition of doze because I was like, okay. So it is for sure to sleep lightly. It's also to be in a dull or stupefied condition or to pass time drowsily, which I love with like the we're at work theme too. So if yeah. we are, if the narrator is our flight attendant, I think that makes a lot of sense that we are, you know, working and we're doing these mundane tasks. So we are maybe in a stupefied condition. But this is also an opportunity to pass time in yeah. some way.
Yes. I also love that, that it sort of speaks to on the last episode. I had mentioned that at the end of the James Dickey poem that I forget what line it had been, but like there was some sort of vibe that I got where he was contrasting like the way that the farmers think mm-hmm. they're like finding her body. And he says something that made me think that he was describing them as like not aware or oblivious or like stupid or something like that. In contrast with like this very vivid, hyper aware perspective that the diver, the faller in the song had. And it gives me these vibes here that like, before you're directly confronted with falling to your death, before you're directly having to grapple with the fact that you're going to die, you're just snoozing like through life. You're kind of just like wasting time and like letting mm-hmm. it pass by kind of.
The line about farmers was, while farmers sleepwalk without their women from houses, a walk like falling towards the far waters of life.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly. They sleepwalk. Like they're not listening. They're not paying attention.
They're not conscious. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I was also going to say maybe Jack says this and maybe we already said this, but like the two notes that we were talking about, the musicality behind it, the A and C, mm-hmm. that there's only the two, which is so atypical of Joanna's music, I think. As far as my like layman perspective can glean that there's just the, you don't know. Is that what you said?
I want to, I have a fact.
Oh.
And I don't know if I, okay. Can I tell you the fact?
I would love to hear the fact.
Shucks. I was going to save it for the end, but I'm going to tell you now because now I'm excited. Sorry. So okay. Something that Jack, no, I think it's perfect. Something that Jack talks about, and you'll hear this in the voicemail that he so graciously submitted to us back in September. So, like, you were on top of your shit, Jack. We appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
So Jack's going to talk a little bit about the harmonic links between songs. So the end of The Pin Light Bent and the beginning of Time is a Symptom. And one of the things that Jack shares is that Time is a Symptom only has three chords. And then Jack talks a little bit about how obviously well Joanna Newsom does like incredibly complex songs, but how Divers is such a beautiful, and Time is a Symptom specifically is such a beautiful example of her incredible ability to make three song chords like epically effective.
I'm sorry, how are there only three chords in that song? What?
I'm trusting Jack here. Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. I can't wait to hear Jack's voice memo. I haven't listened to it yet just because we started recording and it's a longer one, and I we so appreciate that it's long. So I am looking forward to listening to that when we stop recording. But wow, that's super cool. And like, what cool, a talent. Right? That's so cool. And like, it just makes me marvel at her ability to create something so lush sounding and so involved and elaborate, yes, and like regal out of three fucking chords. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's insane.
It also makes me think of when we were recording Have One On Me, the song, and I remember losing my mind over the fun fact of the episode being that like Lola Montez's partner died of syphilis. Do you remember that?
I do remember this. Something about syphilis finger, and I forget how that, yes, factors in.
Because syphilis finger, she was doing something with her finger on the album cover, I think, the way she was holding it. And then someone on Reddit was like, this looks like syphilis finger. And then
we were talking about Sisyphus and syphilis. But we did talk about syphilis too for Have One On Me. I just can't remember the specifics of that.
Anyway, you can go back and listen to us lose our minds.
Yes. Yeah.
Those episodes was, if you want. But for sure, I'm confusing both of them.
I'm so grateful to Jack for having submitted that, because we're so lost musically when it comes to this album, so any insights like that are so fucking appreciated. Just thank you, yeah, thank you endlessly to Jack. What I was gonna say was that even if it's not atypical that she just has these two notes, like, it's so stripped down, there's only the one instrument happening at the beginning of the song, and it makes me think now, considering Rachel Perrin's commentary on this and considering our discussion leading into this about binaries and stark contrasts and opposites and tension, that's kind of reflected in those two notes. I don't know musically about how A and C are related to each other, other than that they're, you know, oh, there's only B in between. But like, it feels like a mirror a little bit of like, there are these two opposing forces, and like, it builds that kind of tension in a way, I think.
Yeah. Yep, I opposites. Love that.
Okay, yep. Cool. Maybe in the circle of fifths or something, they're opposites. I don't know what I'm talking about. I just know that there can be opposites because there's a circle. I don't know. Anyways. Okay. So her life comes and goes. When I first listened to this, like, what are you talking about? Short flights? Like, why are we on planes?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very short direct language, right?
Yes. And yes, this song feels very edited in a way where like she cut out any excesses. This is just like, we're getting down to it now, which I think is keeping with like where we are in the album. We're getting down to it. There's one song left after this. Like, we have to be grappling with some death right now. Oh,
the anxiety I just felt in my body.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're almost there.
We're almost there. Yeah. What do you think she means by free rose? Other than obviously that there are like free rose on this metaphorical flight.
I don't know. Only that. Like, that's, I just feel like it's so direct. Like,
but okay. Like, why mention it? Yeah. Okay.
Why mention it? Great question. No idea. I have such a hard time with these two first first versus, oh my goodness, my brain for a second there. because they are so direct. Yes. And it doesn't feel like there's a lot of wiggle room for misinterpretation.
Yes. Yeah, totally, Sam. So I feel that too.
Okay. Short flight, free rows. I lie down and doze. There was space on the plane. It's a short flight. I could lay down.
Yes. The thing is that I think we're not, like, I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. There is free space. I can lie down. It's direct.
Is it though?
Well, I also think there's this other metaphor happening in the background of this where I think that, and I correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. This is like a very just inchoate interpretation, but I think that the flight is also a metaphor for her life or sure, for life yep. in general. And so like when she falls from the flight, she's falling from life. And mm-hmm. so, and also that maybe that's bolstered by her very, like the fact that she very directly mentions her life right before she's talking about flights. Mm-hmm. So my life comes and goes, short flight. It's like, it almost makes it seem like the short flight is her life, right? She's describing life as being really short in my head, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's a commentary on how, so we have this like lazy, like light, airy description of this flight as being just like empty. Like there's not a lot of work for a stewardess to do. If there's a bunch of free rows on the flight, she has time to lie down and doze. It's all lazy. But then if we switch the perspective to make the flight now talking about her life, it's mm-hmm. a lot heavier and terrifying with the two lines about short flight, free rows, I lie down and doze. That it's a short flight is terrifying because that means like sure. our life's going to be over before we know it. I lie down and doze through most of it, which is heavy in that it's like I'm missing it. It's happening and I'm not paying attention. Yep. And I feel like I should be able to glean something from the free rows, and I just don't really know what to make of that from that metaphor perspective. Like maybe she like doesn't have the people that she loves around her, or like that mm-hmm. she's alone or lonely through a lot of it. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, maybe it's a play on that disconnection that we're gonna get more in the honeycombs.
Ah, yes. Yeah, great point.
Yeah, I do, as you say that, feel the like, nope, you can't sleep. It's a short flight. Like, don't. You need to stay awake because it's going to pass you by so quickly.
Yes, exactly. And like the next line is my life came and went. Like you missed it. It's gone. Yeah. That's all you get.
Yeah.
The like existential dread that I feel sometimes when I think about, like on this very serious note, when I think about like people who die too young, whenever I read about someone like just dying at a young age, the idea that like that's all you get, like you thought you had until you were in your 80s, just like all of us, like we think that we have all this time, but like like if I were to die tomorrow, like oh my god, that's all I get of this life. That was it. Like that's such a fucking terrifying thought to me. I can't, just fear of death overcomes me very much it from that perspective.
And I'm feeling it here. Like, yeah.
You're what?
I'm feeling it here.
Like, yeah.
Now that you know, the perspective here is like, you can't lie down and doze. What?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. Stay awake.
Yeah. There's some angst there. I don't know.
Yes. The genius annotation for this verse, there's one that's sort of just a restatement of the line that I'm not going to read, but in the comments, someone writes, short life, I lie down and doze. This idea of spending one's life in a torpor is introduced in this album's first song, where the newly born narrator, having just followed her fellow spirit guide down to earth, describes her time as laying in our state of torpor, waiting out the day. Note that mm-hmm. the duration of a day and the sun's arc is a repeated metaphor for the span of a life on this album. The languid, sleepy manner in which some of the characters on this album go through life stands in stark contrast to Newsom's urging in the climactic 11th song, I know that you can yield when it comes down to it. Joy of life.
I mean, we did talk about this in anecdotes. We talked about it, about like the physical sensation, the physical activity of like reduced metabolism, heart rate, respiration, and body temperature. We talked about it in anecdotes, but we also talked about it in Colleen.
That's right.
We talked about it when Colleen was diving and like that maybe the cold water is like intentionally slowing her heart rate.
Because the lyrics say something like so slow, where your heart beats so slow.
Yes. I love that we're bringing this back around now. And that connection back to like something biological from the beginning. And now just I love the cyclical nature
yes. of that. Dude, I love when these songs reference each other. It's just, it feeds into this theme of like, our lives are not as unique as we think they are. Like there are these themes that like come up for us in these different ways that are still very like, it feeds into this song so much. Like there's still there's this one experience that we all draw aspects from. And of course, people are going to diverge in their specific experiences, especially on the lines of like gender and race and class and all of that stuff. But like there is this collectiveness, there is this oneness that connects us all. It sounds very like hippy dippy, but like I don't know, when it's put into such complex ways that Joanna puts it, it is more palatable or something. I don't know.
Makes it a little softer,
makes it and just fucking beautiful. I don't know. Someone else on Genius writes, the use of present tense comes and goes, and the repetition of this first line fits aptly with the concept theme of time as non-linear and cyclical. This could be linked to the line in time as a symptom. Time moves both ways. Yes, agree very much. Okay, that is all I have for that verse, I think.
Okay. Do you want to read the next one?
Sure. Okay. So then she sings, my life came and went. My life came and went. Short flight, free descent, poor flight attendant. Boy.
Oh
boy, she fell.
I like that Genius annotation mentions the tense. So first verse, we are in the present, and now it's like, life's gone. It was here and happened. It's gone.
Exactly.
It
came and
it went. It just passed by you. Oh.
It came and it went.
I have no notes.
I know. Verse. I kind of don't either. Because it's, first of all, it's almost the same as the last verse. The only thing that changed is, instead of free rose, it's free descent, and then poor flight attendant instead of I lie down and doze. Everything else, and the tense of the first two lines.
I don't know if it's just the way I read it too, but I get almost like a cynical poor flight attendant here. Not because we don't think she deserves sympathy, but because she is unnamed. That our sympathy is placed on like the role instead of the person. I don't know.
Yeah, that it's an unnamed, like cynical in the sense like that it's like not sincere.
That it's not sincere, I think.
Interesting.
That like, I just imagine someone reading the paper and that's like their poor flight attendant.
It does instead have that vibe.
Instead of having like, holy shit, that's fucked up. How are safety measures not in place? How was she ever in this situation at all? That it's just like kind of a despondent reaction to an actual horrifying event.
That's a great point. It does seem very flippant, like very dismissive almost. Now that you say it like that, like you're right. And it's not like poor Françoise, and like, oh my God, yeah. Françoise de Mérard. It's just like, yeah. Oh, poor flight attendant. So on that interpretation, then I have like these two thoughts that come up. So one is that it's dismissive and that this flight attendant is dispensable, maybe because she's a flight attendant, maybe because she's actually like poor and working as a flight attendant, or like unnamed and unmemorable. But then another one is that, like, from the perspective, from this, like, if we're inching our way towards assuming this like very broad perspective of the whole world in which we are all one, and like that our lives are cyclical and that time is an illusion and all that shit, then like the insincerity or the dismissiveness of saying poor flight attendant is a less of a malicious dismissal and more of a like, mm-hmm. yeah, like we're all gonna die, like that sucks for her, but like also that's of course the end of some, that's of course her fate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it could very much be that, and that, I don't know, that's comforting in a way that it's less malicious and less just and more just like
wise,
that's the deal.
Yeah, exactly. Free descent too is so scary and sad.
It hurts. Like, oh. And I think it probably just hurts because we've spent so much time reading that poem today. Yeah. And so like the description of, or at least this description of her descent is very personal and
like vivid.
And vivid. Yeah.
It also, because there are so few words in these two verses, it makes me think mm-hmm. that there might be like an alternative way of interpreting free descent, like not just a free fall, which is terrible. There might be something about money here too. Like you get to go down for free. I don't know. Or like you are liberated in your death because you're not having to work or something like that.
Interesting.
Like, because I think it's not that crazy to suggest or to think that there could be some class commentary throughout this song, in the sense that the stuff we've already talked about, in that she's like a flight attendant and she has to do domestic work and that she's not remembered by name and all that stuff. And so that she's in service of other people, and also that like she might be strapped for cash because she's relegated to this sort of mundane job. I don't know. Maybe that's there. It sort of makes me think of the longer you live, the higher the rent line on leaving the city, mm-hmm. you know? I don't mm-hmm. know. That's a lot of...
No, I like that connection.
I don't know if I do. But there it is, if it's there. It's just I don't know... what else to say about this verse if we don't dig into specific words, because as you said, it just seems pretty straightforward. Maybe.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of different ways we can interpret free descent. And I don't know. I feel stuck there.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I feel like it is tied so much to that downward movement.
Oh, yeah, definitely tied to that downward movement.
But I also like the idea, you said something about free being like...
liberating?
Yeah. That like, yeah. It's almost comforting that there's like a liberation in that movement.
Yeah.
If only... I don't know what I'm trying to say. If only that it disconnects you from... life. I don't know.
Yeah, and it in this sense like very literally frees her from having to do the work that she's been doing, right? And so she's mm-hmm. in the middle of doing her job, in the Françoise de Mérard case at least, she's in the middle of doing this service work, and yeah, she is in a very gruesome sense freed from this role as she's plunging to her death, and also maybe freed of some kind of torpor. She gets like, you have to be like sprung into awakeness. You have to all of a sudden be very alert of your life and its passing and the passing of time as you're falling to your death and as is described in that poem. And also maybe just like free of certain illusions, like illusions about time and life, and just as we talked about the perspective you might have from being like high up like that. I don't know. Like, I think that perspective, I think Lise has made this point on the Facebook group, but I think that in this song in particular, perspective and optics and illusions, especially visual illusions, are a really prominent theme. And so I wouldn't be surprised if some of that shows up in these early verses here.
No, I wouldn't either. Makes me wonder too, like, we've talked about the perspective. What perspectives have we seen so far? We have the perspective of the flight attendant falling. We have, like, because of the poem, we have, like, the farmers not necessarily seeing her fall, but, like, seeing the aftermath of that. We have also in the poem, like, the proposition of, like, a man, like, possibly intervening to save her. Mm-hmm. There's a few mentions of those. We have, like, the farmer's wives who are in their house. We have, like, because of the news articles, the perspective of, like, the passengers who saved the other flight attendant from falling. I don't know. Do we have, like, a perspective from herself? Like, do we have a first person?
I don't know. That's a good question. Like, I think that we might have the allusion to two different perspectives within herself. So the perspective mm-hmm. of lying down and dozing and, like, just taking life lightly. And then this very contrasting perspective of being hyper alert, like your nerves being frayed, like just as alert as you can be falling to your death. I don't know. I'm the more we talk about it, the more I'm struck by these opposing forces here, because also the way Joanna is singing these parts on top of the music is very sort of sleepy. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's very non-panicky. It is nowhere near the, like, urgency that we get with her voice in a lot of these songs, in a lot of her songs, which is, like, absolutely glorious when it happens. But there's this very, like, calm, sleepy, almost, like, lullaby-y, lulling to sleep-ness to this first part here, which, again, contrasts with that harp in the background that's just playing those two ominous notes.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a question, Sam, about who is speaking to us here, who the narrator is exactly, because I think we've been assuming it's Françoise Demerière, which I think she's being referenced in this song, and maybe she is actually the narrator. But, like, consider for a second this weird sentence structure. So
mm-hmm.
in this first part of the verse, we have "my life came and went,"
mm-hmm.
"short flight, free descent," and then "poor flight attendant." So if it's the flight attendant who's speaking to us, we would expect her to say something like "poor me," right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? That, like, in the one sense, yep. Yeah,
poor flight attendant. The perspective seems to be talking. Strange here too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless it's like, because she's dying, there's some, like, outside perspective of herself.
Yeah, I think that's a great theory about it.
I don't know. And that, like, if you were to watch yourself die in this way, that you would say something like that, like, "oh, poor me," or "poor," I don't know, having a perspective maybe of other people would perceive you.
Yeah, and
I don't know.
I think that that's great. I think it is because she's dying, and I think that she, like, there's some sort of dissociation with herself where like her, mm-hmm. she's maybe now looking at her body or looking at this one discrete singular existence. But that there's this other thing I think is telling to, it informs us about some of the theories on this album, that there is not just, I mean, we know this already, but that there is not just this one existence that we have, that there's something enduring beyond our mm-hmm. individual lives. And I think that maybe in this verse, we get that separation, we get that death, and we get that endurance at the same time. So again, these tensions. And I guess in my head, it's like the enduring thing, looking at the temporary thing and being like, oh, poor flight attendant, even mm-hmm. though she was that flight attendant.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that.
And yeah. maybe that the naming of her as a flight attendant too is like this bigger, wiser thing, recognizing the life of the flight attendant as being in service, as like as being devoted to and like sacrificed for the service of others. I don't know.
I'm just laughing to myself here, Nikki, because I'm on joannanewsomelyrics.com and I was just looking through the comments and who pops up but you?
I commented on it. What did I say? Times.
Oh, well, I'm not going to, oh, let's save them for another episode because it's later verbs, but I was like, I know that face. That's a picture of you.
I'm so embarrassed because what I wrote 7 years ago, I don't know if I stand by it. I don't know. Let's see here.
I do. It's about like the Amora Obscura lines. So we can read your comments when we get there.
But that was 8 like, years yeah. ago.
Pretty good.
Oh my God. And I'm like, this is before there were official lyrics. Because I was like, I hear great night shines too. Wrong. Great light. All right. Well, there I am. Cool, 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 cool.
I love that. In all your glory, you are just yourself.
I am. Yeah, I've been me for a while. It's that's an enduring thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have more to say about this verse?
I'm shaking okay. my head.
She's no. shaking her head. No. Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll say goodbye for now, right?
Yes. I would like to have a little more time with the next few verses, even though there's only 3 of them. But yeah, let's keep that in our pocket and say thank you for listening. As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you have thoughts, feelings, essays, quick little snippets of thoughts, you can find us many, many ways. You can post in the Facebook group. You can slide into our DM. Oh, sorry. Okay. Our Facebook group is
A Hopeless Endeavor. Joanne Newsom Podcast.
Thank you. Our Instagram is A Hopeless Endeavor Podcast. You can DM us there too. Our email address is ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. Nikki does an out of this world job editing all of these episodes, but also posting everything on Patreon. And you can find us on Patreon at
patreon.com/ahopelessendeavor. There you can find early episode releases. The episodes range from being weeks early to a day early, so it's just it really depends on like my schedule with the baby. But happy birthday to Lila today, by the way.
Oh,
she's
my
1 year
gosh,
old.
Gosh,
so.
Happy birthday yeah. to our favorite co-host of all time. Lola Bear.
Little Lola Bear. So check us out there. We have bonus episodes as well. We are very, very, very slowly working our way through a first impression series of her new music. So we have one episode up about Bombs Are Whistling. We're going to record soon-ish on Little Hands. I always forget if there's an S at the end of that song. True. But anyways, that other new song that she has. So yeah, we're working our way through those songs there. Plus we have just like bonus episodes where we just discuss some like listener theories and some random thoughts that we had. We have sillier bonus episodes too. So you can check us out there if you want. I will link to it in the show notes. And yeah, patreon.com/ahopelessendeavor.
Thanks.
Email guys. Us. Did we say that?
We did.
ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think that's it. Thank you guys so much for being here. I think that the next verse that we're getting into, like, buckle your fucking seatbelts. Don't be like John Perry Mitchell.
Learn from his mistakes, everyone.
Strap on in because this shit's gonna get turbulent.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
Well, there's gonna be like, okay, whatever. We'll get into it when we get into it. Bye.
Bye.